we're starting in Ein Yaakov. The yeshiva's copy of Ein Yaakov is missing. If anyone knows where it is, it would be nice to get it back. I'm working off of the Gemara now. I didn't come from home, so I don't have my Ein Yaakov. So we're going to pick up where we left off, but we have to go on the order of the Gemara. We're on Heyam and Days and Brachos. You have one?
Yeah, there's one upstairs.
Hebrew or English?
English.
Does it have the Hebrew text with it? If it has the Hebrew, that would be good. Thank you. So the Gemara says, Tani Tana Kamed Rav Yochanan. This is where we left off. Whoever deals in Torah and acts of kindness, v'koveret banav, and nonetheless finds himself burying his children, mochalino al kol avonotav, then he should know that in heaven they've forgiven him for all his sins. So this is the quote that was said before Rabbi Yochanan. We know Rabbi Yochanan was the great Amora of Israel who composed the Jerusalem Talmud. Amal Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan said to him, and this is where we left off. Rabbi Yochanan asked him, what's the source that if he buries his children, that's a sign all his sins have been forgiven? Tanaleahu Saba, that elder told him, and we discussed last week that might be Eliyahu Hanavi, Mishum Rashbi. So this much we saw. So Rav Yochanan was told that if one deals with Torah and Gemil Chassadim, notice it's not enough to deal with Torah alone, as the Talmud tells us in Gemara Avodah Zarah, Kolo Osek B'Tamud Torah Bilvad, whoever deals only in Torah, Domek Mishon Le'Eloha, it's as though he doesn't have a God. It's not enough to deal only in Torah. We also have to deal in kindness. So if he's doing both of these, and nonetheless he finds himself burying his children, he should know that in heavens all sins have been forgiven. And we derived last week, we explained the derivations from the verses. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Now we have a quote from Rabbi Yochanan himself. Negaim uvanim enam yisurim shlava. Negaim, the blotches, the white blotches that the Torah says will cause a person to be defiled, to have tzaras. It's called nega tzarat. Uvanim, and children. And here the Gemara isn't sure what Rav Yochanan meant, whether it means a person who never has children or a person who loses his children. These are not yisurin shel ahava. These are not afflictions that stem from love. V'negaim lo. So the Gemara begins by attacking Rav Yochanan's first point. Can it be that negaim, the tzaras, is not an affliction of love? It can never be an affliction of love. V'atanya, but we have Tanai quote. Kol mi sheyesh bo echad me'arba amarot negaim alalu. If one finds himself with one of the four types of blotches that cause a person to be defiled, so then that's like an altar of atonement. So we see that they do atone if one gets one of these negate tzarat. So the Gemara answers, Mizbech kapara havu. They are an altar of atonement, yisurin shel ahava lo havu, but they are not afflictions of love. Ibaitema, or else another understanding is, if you want, I could say another answer, halan v'halahu. There's a difference between whether one gets a nega in Israel or in Chotzarts. In Israel, we know that the walled cities had holiness. And when a person got a nega tzarat, he had to leave all the walled cities. The walled cities were more holy. Jerusalem was a walled city. He could not ascend to the Temple Mount. He could not go within his own city if it was a walled city. He has to leave his base medrash. He has to leave his Rebbe. There, he's really losing out. He might not even be able to find a minion. So that's just Nizbech Kapara, that's atonement, but it's not Yisroin Shlava. But in Chotzar, it's in Babylon, there, even if he has Negatzarat, so he could do whatever he wants, so that's not a problem. And this Gemara is an indicator that even in the period of Rav Yochanan, which was a very late generation, they were still maintaining a level of purity in the land of Israel. We know that long after the temple was destroyed, they had the Parah Aduma ashes, and they were practicing the purity of Parah Aduma, till the period of Rava, probably. But this level of purity that Torah Yochanan, we're talking about the end of the Jerusalem Talmud, 70 years before the end of the Babylonian Talmud, that they still maintain this holiness with regard to Negei Tzarat, that they seem to have a tradition on what is a Negei Tzarat and what isn't a Negei Tzarat. Here we see in the Gemara that they did. David?
Isn't there also a distinction between visible and non-visible?
That's the next answer. Vivayt Eman, if you want, I'll give you another answer. Habetzinah, habifaresia, it depends. If it's visible, he's ashamed, everyone sees what it is, so that's not out of love. But if it's just between himself and God, so then there's the affliction, it's painful, but but it's still, but it's not that level that other people know about it. So then it could be Yisurin Shlava. Uvanim lo, Rav Yochanan said that children is also not Yisurin Shlava. Heichi dami, how does Rav Yochanan mean? Ile madavu leumitu, if Rav Yochanan meant that a person had children and then they died, v'amar Rav Yochanan din gama dasirat bir. We discussed that Rav Yochanan lost all 10 children of his, all 10 sons of his, and the 10th one fell into a vat of boiling water, something boiling, and boiled to death, and all that was left was a small, small bone or a small tooth, and he used to carry that around in a handkerchief, and he used to say, this is the bone of my 10th son, and he'd comfort people with it. When he'd come to people, and people were sitting Shiva, and when a person's sitting Shiva, so part of our job when we come to visit Shiva is to help the person deal with the philosophical difficulty of the fact that there is, call it bad, call it sad, call it things that are uncomfortable and convenient, such as death. There are things that we feel like, hey, wait a second, God, why is this in the world? So when a person is faced with the difficulty of death, with the philosophical questions of things being sad or bad in this world, so then when we comfort them, what we're supposed to help them do is be able to deal with that philosophical quandary. So Rabbi Yochanan would come with this bone and say, this is the bone of my 10th son. I lost all 10, and that was part of how he is showing the person, you know, sometimes you could deal. Even though things are difficult, you could deal.
Isn't it a mitzvah? I mean, if the remnant, the what remains from deceased person to bury it?
So it seems like such a small piece, it's okay to leave. That's what it seems like. It was small enough that it wasn't to me. And I guess it was small enough that it wasn't obligatory to bury it.
But it was the only remaining what was left from
I'll tell you the truth. Your question is good. And I'm embarrassed to say I never thought of the question when I learned the Gemara. It's been many years. You know, after you learn the Gemara, the first time certain things take for granted. Your question deserves more research than I know to answer you. It's chaval I should give you. Whatever I'm going to tell you is things that I'm giving you off the cuff, and I never thought of it. So I need to think about it, and I need to look into it. Your question is good.
Could he fulfill the mitzvah of burying?
So I need to look into it. I have to look. I don't know.
If they don't find anything like with the Inan Ramon, if my son dies in an unnatural way that I can't find anything, can I bury his talis?
I don't know of any such inyan. It's interesting that Rav Yochanan would go around with this. I've chanced to encounter people who lost their children, and they really each one used to take something from the child that they carry around with them. Sometimes it's a picture, but I know of a guy who goes around with his son's dog tag around his neck, never leaves his neck. The tag that they wear and the soldiers wear. The son was maimed and murdered by Arabs, so that he got back from the army and that he wears. So if Rav Yochanan would comfort others and he'd let it be known that he lost all 10 children, then it can't be that this is something that's derogatory. Rav Yochanan, when he said that sons is not Yisurin Shlava, it's not afflictions of love, then he couldn't have meant that a person's losing his sons, isn't it? Because if losing one son is not that, then he wouldn't have said it so openly. Ela hadelo havule, but if a person doesn't have children at all, that's not Yisurin Shlava. Hadlo havule klal, vadu havule omito. And when a person has children, yet they die, that can be Yisurin Shlava. Now, here we have a problem. A lot of great people never had children. How are we to understand that? So Tosus right away says, yeah, and you also have great people who didn't have children. Yoshua ben Nun didn't have any sons. He had daughters, but Rav Yochanan also had daughters. So we see that the daughters isn't what we're talking about. So Tosus automatically says in all of this, we can't judge. We don't know. We don't know. We all pray that we should have children. There's another Gemara. The Gemara in Moed Katan says, B'ni chaye umzoni, sons, life, and parnasa, lo b'zchut atalia milta, la b'mazla atalia milta. Those aren't contingent on your zchut, your merits. Those are contingent on your mazel, where a person is born in the constellations. So Tosus and Shabbos asks, what do you mean? En mazal Yisrael? Oh, I'm so happy you're here tonight. Tosa says, what do you mean? The Jews don't have mazel? So Tosa says, sometimes they can overcome the mazel. But in general, they do have mazel. And sometimes they cannot. Because as we discussed last week and the week before, the story of Rav Lezer ben Pedas, and we're going to learn about him tonight as well, that Rav Lezer ben Pedas, he was suffering. He was very poor. He had let blood. He had nothing to eat. And he needed to eat after letting blood. And all he had was a piece of garlic. He took it, and it knocked him out. And then God appeared to him, and he discusses with God. And God says, you want? We'll recreate the world. Maybe things will be better for you. Seems like God's telling him maybe, not necessarily. It depends on how the constellations work. So that's what Tosus leaves us hanging, so to speak. Tosus says, sometimes you cannot overcome the mazel. In general, we say a Jew can. But firstly, a Jew has to really be big to overcome the mazel. We're born with mazel. We can overcome the mazel, and sometimes we can't. So that's a classical answer, by the way. You'll see throughout, there's almost no absolute. We say about most things that usually like this, but sometimes like that. Kol Yisrael yesh lem chelek lo am haba. Ve'elu shein lem chelek lo am haba. What about the exceptions? Who don't? And then you have an opinion in the Gemara. It says, yeah, but even they do. They can. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan chalash. Rabbi Yochanan became ill. He was very weak. Alegabe Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Chanina came to visit him. Amale. So Rabbi Chanina asked him, Chavivin alecha yisurin. You enjoy afflictions. Amale lohen velo scharan. He said, I'd forgo them and I'd forgo their merits. Of course, I get wages for what I'm doing, for the fact that I'm suffering. But I'm willing to forgo both of them. Amale. So Rabbi Chanina told him, Havli yedach. Give me your hand. Extended his hand, Yavle Yedei gave him his hand, Ve'ukme, he stood him up, and then from there he started feeling better. V'amai, why did Rabbi Yochanan need Rabbi Chanina to help him stand up? Lukim Rabbi Yochanan l'nafshei, why didn't Rabbi Yochanan stand himself up? Deha, Rabbi Chia bar Abba chalash, for when Rabbi Chia bar Abba was weak, and he couldn't get out of bed. Ve'ale gabei Rabbi Yochanan, and when Rabbi Yochanan visited Rabbi Chia bar Abba, who was so weak, V'amale, and Rabbi Yochanan said to him, Chavivin alecha yisurin, do you like these afflictions? Amale lohen velos charan. Rabbi Chia bar Abba said, I'm willing to forgo them and their wages and what I'll get paid for them. Amale, Rabbi Yochanan said to Rabbi Chia bar Abba, Havli yedach, give me your hand. Yavle yedei, give him his hand. Ve'ukme, he stood him up. And then Rabbi Chia bar Abba was okay. So if Rabbi Yochanan could stand up, Rabbi Chia bar Abba, why couldn't he stand himself up? Ve'leku miur lenafshei, why let Rabbi Yochanan stand himself up? Amri, so the students in the yeshiva answered, in chavush matir tatzmo mi bet asurin, a person who's bound cannot release himself from captivity. Even a person who's strong enough to help others. And this term is used often in discussion of mental issues. Sometimes a person can be very helpful to many people, but sometimes he hits depression and he can't get out of it. So why? Because this is the concept. Sometimes when a person is himself in bondage, he can't let himself out. He needs someone else to take him out. He could be helpful to everyone else. But when he himself falls, so just like he helped others, he needs others to help him. And it's nothing to be ashamed about. So this is used often, this concept. En chavush matir tzmo mbet asurin. You can't rely on a person who, he's in captivity, to let himself out. A man could have been Zorro. He's always releasing people. He's Robin Hood. He's jumping in and out and taking everyone out of jail. But once he's in jail, he can't get out. He needs someone else to take him out. So that's the concept. Rabbi Elazar Chalash. Rabbi Elazar, and some say this is the famous Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, who we discussed earlier, was suffering so many afflictions. Ale gabei Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan went up to him to visit him. Chazed avi kagani, he saw that he was resting. Bebet afel, in a dark house. Galia, he revealed ledarei, to his arm, just like that. Venapal nehora, and light fell. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan was from the remainder of the children of Jerusalem, that the children of Jerusalem had such beauty they would shine. The nations would come and look at them and they'd marvel. They talk about the beauty of the children of Jerusalem. And when Jerusalem was destroyed, so too was the beauty of the children destroyed. And a remnant of that beauty, a flicker of that beauty, was Rabbi Yochanan. The women would look at Rabbi Yochanan and pray, we should have beautiful children like Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was a gorgeous person, and not only was he beautiful, but his skin shone. So he comes into this dark house, and he sees everything's dark. So, you know, if a person sitting in a dark house, one of the laws of Bikur Cholim is that you have to spray perfume in the house, you bring nice flowers, you bring nice balloons, you air out the house, you clean out the house. The house has to be fresh. Part of what happens when a person is ill is that they sit in this dank, dark room, and then they get sicker and sicker, and all they have is the germs around them and the mold going around them. And what we have to do, bikur cholim, means to check on the sick. Bikur doesn't mean to visit. Levaker means to discern. That's why boker is called boker. What's boker? Boker is when the sun shines and we can discern between two different things. Boker comes from the word levaker, to discern. When we visit the sick, bikur, cholim, it's not the visit of the sick, it's the discernment of what the sick needs. As the Ramah says in Shulchan Aruch, anyone who visits the sick and does not pray for them did not fulfill the mitzvah. Because what does every ill person need? He needs our prayer. That you know he needs. Maybe he needs something else. Maybe he needs you to get something for him. That's Bikur Cholim. So Rabbi Yochanan comes in and he sees Rabbi Lezer lying in this dark house. So he picks up his sleeve, V'nafal Nehora, and the light falls. So he sees Rabbi Lazar crying. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan said to Rabbi Lazar, Amai kabachit, why are you crying? Im mishum Torah de lo afshit, if because you haven't gotten enough learning of Torah in, Shaninu, we have the Mishnah that teaches us, Echad amar beve, Echad amar mit, uvivad shechaven libo l'shamayim. When we have an enumeration in the Mishnah and in the Torah, we say that the enumeration is ordered. If something is listed first, that means it's first in importance. Second in importance. Sometimes the ordering is in the order of how big a chidush it is. When the Mishnah says echad, echad, what the Mishnah is telling me is, both of these are number one. They're equal. Echad hamarbe. Firstly, one who gives a lot. Ve'echad hamamit. And firstly, one who gives a little. Uvevad shechaven libo l'shamayim. So long as his intent is for heaven, if he can't afford a big animal sacrifice, all he could bring is a bird sacrifice, a flower sacrifice. The Torah says about all of them, Reach Nichoach. They're all a pleasant smell before God. The Torah uses the same terminology when describing how they are accepted before God to indicate to us this concept. Echad amar be, regardless of whether you give a lot or you give a little, uvilvad, the condition is, Shechaven tivo l'shamayim, that one's intent is for the sake of heavens. So Rabbi Yochanan is looking at Rabbi Lazar and he says, you've put everything you could into it. Now you're standing ill towards the end of your life and you're crying. If it's because you have not accomplished as much Torah as you would have liked, well, that's not in your hands. We know that God taught us that God doesn't measure us based upon how much we've accomplished. Each person has to do his best. So you did your best. You didn't get as much as you would have liked in. Okay, but you did your best.
So hold on. Torah studied and what we learned is what Hashem wants us to learn.
I didn't follow the question.
No, he said that learning Torah is in heaven's hands?
Learning Torah, to an extent, is in heaven's hands. We're all given a certain potential. We have to fill that potential.
So all the study we want and all the study we do, we can only absorb whatever heaven decides we should.
We're each given a max. We're each given a maximum. There is a maximum. Most people don't attain close to it. But we do have a certain maximum. The unfortunate thing is that we think our maximum is much lower than it really is. Our maximum is tremendous. And it's a question of how much we want it. The Gemara says Abaye used to sit there focusing on his learning, standing on his thumbs would bleed, he wouldn't notice it. The rabbis in the time of the Gemara, when they put on their shoes on Sunday, they didn't untie their shoes till Friday. Their shoes were on all week long, because who has time to stop to untie his shoes to go to sleep? So it's a question of how much a person invests. Rabbi Avadia Yosef had a chavrusa. I don't know if it's fair to quote his name. A very, very big rabbi. So they once asked this chavrusa, who was a tremendous rabbi, but he didn't make it like Rabbi Avadia Yosef. So they asked him, how come Rabbi Avadia Yosef got to where he got, and you, as big as you are, you didn't get to where he got? And he said, the difference is that we'd learn together over breakfast. I'd eat, and he'd read the learning, and then he'd eat, and I'd read the learning. When came his turn to make the sandwich, so he'd take a glob of butter, take a bite, eat the sandwich, and that was the end of his breakfast. I'd take the time to smear my butter on the sandwich. If I took the time to smear my butter on the sandwich, that's why I only got to where I am today. In order to be where Rav Avadia Yosef is, so you have to invest your time. People say, oh, he's a genius. Do people know that he didn't have money for a light in his house? That he'd go out of his house every night to the shul in Egypt, where he was rabbi. He'd go to shul where there was one candle, the Ilui Neshama, and he'd sit there with that one candle because he couldn't afford a candle in his own house and learn through the night. Now, the candle was in the front of the shul, and where he could sit down and learn his books, there was a drip from the ceiling. So in the back of the shul, they had piles of mattresses for guests. So when he'd sit over the books learning, he'd put a mattress over his head so that he could learn without the drip falling on him. That's how he'd learn, leaning over a book by one candle with a mattress on his back. And when that mattress became filled with water, he'd put the mattress on the side and take another mattress. That's how a person becomes Rav Ovadia Yosef. It's easy to sit here and say, he's a genius, he's got a great memory, he's this, he's that. Doesn't work that way. We each have potential. So we're not responsible to achieve his potential, but we are responsible to achieve ours. And the only way we'll achieve it is if we do the maximum. But Rabbi Elazar had done his maximum. So Rabbi Yochanan tells him, you didn't get to where I am. You see me and you're crying. If you're crying because you didn't attain as much Torah as you would have liked, there is a maximum. One person is born to a father who's a millionaire, and his father says, go learn Torah, I'm funding you for life. Okay, the Marshal had a mother-in-law who was a millionaire. She funded him. She funded his kolel. He could learn. The Rambam had a brother who funded his learning. He could learn. Then the Rambam had troubles. He had to learn less, like he writes in his letters. He went down. At different points in life, a person can learn more, a person can learn less. There are things that are beyond our control. What's within our control is what we demand of ourselves. So, we also have a cap. We do have a maximum potential. But our attitude has to be, when am I going to be like Avraham Avinu? When are my actions going to be like the actions of my forefathers? That's where we have to strive for. We have to learn the Rambam that says every Jew can be Moshe Rabbeinu. We each have that potential. Now, truthfully, there is a cap. One person has a higher IQ, one person has a lower IQ. But we have to do our best and we have to pray for godly assistance. But now that Rabbi Elazar ben Pedasa is standing at the end of his life and he's crying, Rabbi Yochanan asks him, why are you crying? If it's because you haven't accomplished as much Torah as me, so then that's not how you're getting gauged. We gauge by where one's intent is. Did he do his best? And if because you're sitting here in a situation where you're hungry and you have very little food, not every person merits to have two tables, one in this world and one in the world to come. A lot of people in this world, they merit to learn. They don't merit to have good parnasa. That can't be why you're crying. Imishum bani, and if because you've lost all your children, then gama dasira abir. I've lost all 10 of mine. This is the bone of my 10th son. Amale, so Rabbi Elazar told him, I'm crying. Lehay shufra de bali be'afra. For this beauty, that's going to wear in the dirt. For that kabachina, I'm crying. I look at you. I see your beauty. I see your beauty, which is remnant of the temple. And I know that you're at the end of your line, and I'm at the end of my line. I know the temple's being destroyed, and its beauty's gone. And now you're the one thing that I still see a remnant of the temple in you. And I know that you're gonna ultimately be in the ground. For that, I cry. Amale al davadai kabachit. He says, for that. For sure, I can understand that you've cried. Uvachu tavayu, and both of them wept. And dehachi behachi, as they were there, amale chavimin alecha yisurin. He asked him, "Do you enjoy? Do you like afflictions?" Amale lohen velo scharan. He said, "Not them, nor their reward, nor their merit, their wages." Amale havli yedach. Rav Yochanan said to Rav Elazar ben Pedas, "Give me your hand." Yavle yedei v'ukme. He gave him his hand, and he stood him up. Rabuna. The great Rav Huna, Takifu le'alba me'adani dechamra. Rav Huna was a very wealthy person, and suddenly 400 of his barrels of wine went sour. Ale gavei Rabbi Yehuda achvad Rav Salah chassid of Rabbanan. Rabbi Yehuda, the brother of Rav Salah, the chassid, and the rabbis came to visit him. For when a person loses a substantial amount of money, we also comfort him. We don't only comfort a person for a loss of a relative, but we also comfort a person for a loss of money. Right? Person, his stocks went down. He just lost everything he owned, so he also needs comfort. Some say it was Rav Ida bar Ahava and the rabbis who visited him. Amule, they told him, Le'ayin mal b'mile. Will the rabbi please look over his actions, what he's done? So they're calling him Mar. They're talking to him with great respect. They're all his students. But nonetheless, they're telling him, check out what you've been doing. Amalu mi chashitna be'inaychu. He says, you guys suspect me? You think I did something wrong? They asked him, and do you suspect that God does a punishment without there being justice, that there's deservance for it? Now, they only said this because they had a claim against him. Ordinarily, if someone loses, his stocks go down and loses $3 million, it's not our business to come in and tell him, you know, maybe look over your stuff. Here, the only reason they walked in and told him this was because they knew there was something he did wrong. He said, if anyone heard about me something that I've done wrong, tell me. So they all told him, this is what we've heard, that the rabbi hasn't given part of the twigs to his sharecropper. You have a deal with the sharecropper. He works your field. He gives you the grapes. He gives you the wine. And then you split the wine. Well, the halacha is that just like you split the wine, you also have to split the twigs that you cut off the branches so that he could sell it for firewood. It's a small amount of money. But we've heard that you don't give your sharecropper that part of the wood that you own.
The twigs are dead. They're not planted.
Right. So he said to them, Mikashavik limidi mine. You think he leaves me anything over? He's supposed to give me 80%, 70%. You think he's really giving me that? Come on, I know how much my crops are supposed to give. He's not giving me as much as he owes me, and he doesn't know this Mishnah, so I'm not giving him the wood. I got to save something. I know he's trying to steal me blind.
So he's already stolen his share. I thought that's what he said.
That's how they translate it here, but that's not how I think Rashi translates it. Rashi says, Rashi says, "V'chi eino chashud beinechem shu gonev li arbe yoter mechelko." Don't you suspect that he's stealing much more than his portion? That's how Rashi says it. Amri lei, so they answered him, "Haynu damu inji." That's what people, the common saying goes. But tagan vagnov, if you steal from a thief, v'tamateim, you'll have the taste of a thief. Bottom line, you took something that's not yours. Amar lo, he said, "Kabina la di ehiv nalei." I accept that I'll give him. Fine, I accept your rebuke. It doesn't say. I don't know.
It's important whether it's Jewish
or I don't know the halacha. I assume it's a question of what the agreement is. What's the accepted agreement? That's usually what defines these things. The norm. Now, is our beat now or in 5 minutes? Half past or 35 past?
Right now, 7:29.
When is our vid?
7:35.
35, okay. So he said, I accept upon myself that I will give him what I owe him. Ikadamri, some say, that the vinegar turned back to wine. That's unnatural. It was a miracle. Vikadamri, and others say, the price of vinegar shot up, is dam bidmei chamra, and was sold at the price of wine, which is an even greater miracle that God changed the markets all over, that suddenly vinegar becomes so expensive it gets sold at the price of wine. He accepted to do what was right, and the decree was undone. Tanya, we have a Tanai quote. Abba Binyamin Omer. Abba is like Mr. Abba is a term of respect. Mr. Binyamin says, Al bet varim hayti mitzter kol yamai. There were two things that I, throughout my days, I tried to take care, I was very careful about. Al tvilati shetei lifnei mitati, that my prayer should be just before my bed. And that my bed should be situated exactly between north and south. That which he said, that my prayer should be before my bed. What does he mean before my bed? If we understand it literally, that he'd stand by his bed and pray. Rabbi Yehuda quoted Rav, or Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, he quoted as saying, when a person prays, how do we know we shouldn't have anything stopping between him and the wall? Shneimar, as the verse states, that Chizkiyo, the king, when he turned to pray to God, he turned to the wall, meaning he prayed and there was nothing stopping between him and the wall. So how could it be that he's always taking care to have the bed in between him and the wall? I always prayed before my bed. What does that mean? So our sages say, no, don't say that he said, I always prayed before my bed, but rather he said, my prayer should be adjacent to my bed. That right after I get out of bed, I don't make phone calls, I don't sit and learn, I don't make myself a cup of coffee, I quickly go to pray. That right after I get out of bed, the first thing I do in the morning is I go to pray. So that's the first thing Abba Binyamin was careful about. That my bed in which I sleep with my wife will be placed between north and south. Rabbi Chama, the son of Rabbi Chanina, said, others say it was Rabbi Yitzchak who said, whoever places his bed between north and south, he will have male children, as the verse states, your northness will fill their stomachs and they will be satiated with sons. So from here our sages derived either that he will have male children, or his wife also won't miscarry. When we say the northness will fill the stomach, it's adjacent to the filling of the days of pregnancy. Now what does this mean? So you'd be surprised that it's unclear what this means. Some say literally, when one's bed is the bed that one's going to be with his wife, the head of the bed should face north. Others say it should face south, and others say it should face east. What no one says is that it should face west and feet should go to east. What does it mean between north and south? That the head is to the north, that the head is to the south, or that it's lying between north and south and the head is to the east? But the head should definitely not be to the west. Now this all goes to Kabbalistic concepts. If you want someone that understands it, search high and low and let me know if you found them. I don't know. But it is Bron Shulchan Aruch. This is Bron Shulchan Aruch. This is only when a person's married and he's with his wife. Any other time, you don't have to worry about it. Yeah?
Is the question, is this book worn for married couples, or does a single person
have to... No, only married couples. And only married couples when they're together. Something to think about when you check an apartment, bring a compass along.
So the couple basically can sleep in a different direction, but when they're in the...
When they're together.
Then they should...
Correct. Correct. That's what it seems. Yeah.